The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Asking myself, why should I work so hard? Sit and dream about the days to come. Half a dress just soaking up the sun.
A little lighthouse for you folks. Hey, it's Saturday, May 21st. I knew you weren't going to be surprised that I'd still be doing my show, right? That's not really a huge surprise. You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show, streaming live at drewmarshall.ca, and we're being as rapture cheeky as possible here on May 21st. Ian Morgan Cron, at the age of 16, was told by his mother that his father, a motion picture executive, also worked for the CIA in Europe. Are you kidding me? Is this real? This astonishing revelation, coupled with his father's dark struggles with alcoholism, upended the world of a boy struggling to become a man. Decades later, as he faces his own personal demons, Ian realizes the only way to find peace is to voyage back through a childhood marked by extremes. Privilege and hardship, violence and tenderness, truth and deceit, that he spent years trying to forget. In this surprisingly funny, I don't know why it's surprisingly, Ian's a funny guy, surprisingly funny and forgiving memoir, Ian reminds us that no matter how different the pieces may be, in the end, we are all cut from the same cloth. Get ready for it, folks. Stitched by faith into an exquisite quilt of grace. Brought to you by Hallmark, right there. Ian Morgan Cron, how are you, buddy?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. How are you?
Are you ready for this? What are you
well,
talking about?
You know, I'm just laughing at listening to back cover copy of a book, you know, where they try to reduce your whole life to 75 words.
What? What's wrong with that?
Well, you know, it's nice if you can do it, you know.
It's good work if you can get it.
And the little kicker at the end is just, it's just extraordinary, isn't it?
I want to go right to your endorsements for a second here, because you got a lot of rebellious people signing off in your book. I don't know whether Brian McLaren's endorsement is the kiss of death or the kiss of life, but this is great. There are books you have to read because they are important for your work, and books you want to read because they humanize you and deepen your soul. This is one of those want-to-read books, a portal that transports you into the struggles of childhood, the agony of alcoholism. Sounds like Wide World of Sports here. The joys of coming of age, the terror and hope of parenthood, and the mystery of faith. Enthusiastically recommended, Brian McLaren. By the way, Phyllis Tickle told me to say hello. She loves you.
Oh, I'm just telling you, Lord forbid anything happened to my wife, but it's, you know, it's either Emmylou Harris or Phyllis Tickle. One or the other. That's my next wife.
Okay, Ian, why at this point in your life are you doing a memoir of sorts? Have you also bought a Porsche as well? Is it like a midlife thing? What's going on?
You know, I did turn 50 this year.
Congratulations.
And, so I think there's something there. You know, I think I'm at a point in my life when sitting down and having to write out the narrative was a way of trying to organize grace a little bit, or how do I say it, kind of kick over the broken pieces and look for the grace underneath it all. And it was just a good moment for that for me.
And everybody wants to know about the process. I mean, when, you know, very few of us are privileged with the time to sit down and sort of vomit up all of our past and then reorganize it into a nice, pleasant dish. To be served publicly, no less. So, what was tough? Like, what freaked you out going through this? Was there a therapist involved in this, or what?
Yeah. Drew, you ought to know there's always been a therapist involved. And on several occasions, it's been recommended a team of therapists should be involved.
In a bucket of holy water.
In a bucket of holy water, yeah. To be taken internally and externally. It was a tremendously conflicting time filled with, you know, when you grow up in an alcoholic family, you know, this is the mantra. Don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. And, you know, when you start to break those rules, even at 50, those are deeply ingrained in you. As a kid, they don't go away. Hmm. And so as you start to tell your story, my father's been dead since 1986. Even still, breaking the rules, telling the truth, It's terrifying. Yeah, there were a lot of sleepless nights, and lots of moments in the book where there were tears shed. You know, on my own, sitting at my desk, pools of grief I discovered that I had not fully plumbed the depth of, you know?
Hmm.
And I went, wow, I just didn't know that was still there. So all to say, very intense experience.
Do you think you nailed it? Do you think you got it?
I think I got part of it. I think that, like Frederick Buechner, and trust me, I am not comparing my work to that genius's work at all. You know, it's like saying, well, you know, like Tolstoy. You know, no, I think there's probably two more of these written from different angles. You know, not the same story, just different angles. And so the answer is no, I did not get all of it, but I did get a nice swath of it.
Whenever somebody plows through their past, inevitably someone's going to get hurt in whatever you write down. Was there somebody that had to pass away before you could write this?
Well, my father did.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Is that the reality? Could you have written this while he was alive? No.
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like you're talking about him behind his back?
No. I think my father, at the end of his life, was a different man in as much as he could be. Do you know what I mean? There was only so far he could go in terms of getting well as a human being. And I think he took it about as far as he could. He was a tremendously powerful figure. I would never have written this book when he was alive. Memoir writing is dangerous. You know, I mean, you're either someone's going to be mad at you because you didn't say enough about them.
Yeah.
Or they're going to be mad at you because you said too much.
Well, that's how I felt when Kathy Lee wrote her latest book. You know, she made no mention of me whatsoever in that book.
I know. That was deeply wounding to you.
Yeah.
I know. I'll pass that on to her.
Please.
Because I know you can't. I know that you're shy and reticent.
Yes. Well, I'm also persona non grata now that I'm questioning my faith. Look, everyone tweaks on the CIA, right? And everyone goes, okay, hold on a second. Ian, buddy, your dad was an alcoholic. How can you know that him being on the CIA was truth or not?
Uh-huh.
How do you know?
Well, that I do know.
You could tell me, but...
Interestingly enough, well, in as much as anyone can know, I know. How's that? I mean, you can... Let me just say this. When I went to the Central Intelligence Agency and I asked under the Freedom of Information Act for information about work that my father did for them, trust me when I tell you that they're not excited to tell you a lot. It's not like you get a lady on the phone who says, oh, hold on, honey, let me just grab that file. I mean, you know, they don't, that's not what happens, you know. What happens is they put you through one hoop after another, and if in your last letter the comma wasn't in the right place, they make you redo it, you know, and then they get back to you again. And finally, the letter I got essentially said, and this was one of the classic lines: "We can neither confirm nor deny that your father, you know, worked for the Central Intelligence Agency, and if he was working." In the clandestine services area, we will never be able to tell you.
Hmm.
Like, in 100 years from now, we won't tell you. I had a friend of mine called at the Central Intelligence Agency. He's a lawyer, one of the 6 million they have. And he grew up in a very strange, I won't tell you which one, but, you know, a very odd African country. And one you don't hear about much is what I mean.
Right.
And he said, I'm sure my father worked at the Central Intelligence Agency. So I went and I asked if he did, and they said, we can't tell you. He said, I work in the same building with the answer. So, you know, in the early days, and this would have been, you know, the 1950s, when this began, my father,
mm-hmm.
These guys were mavericks. And there were no rules. It was it was spycraft in those days. And I know people. I've spoken to them. I know who knew him, knew what he did. And in the book, I also describe an episode where he was up for a job in the intelligence services in Eastern Europe when I was in high school. So we were interviewed as a family. Because they didn't, you know, that's when I really, when it really became, I mean, there would always been a sort of obscure kind of opaque references to what his dad did, but that's when we really knew that he had been involved for certain in that world for a long time.
Ian Morgan Cron on the phone with us. He's the author of Jesus, My Father, the CIA, and Me, a memoir of sorts. Killer title, by the way. I mean, that's
thank you.
Killer title.
Yep.
Did the weird stuff you grew up with affect how you did your faith?
Yes. But what it did was is it made me less naive early on.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like I even at 16. I knew that the script that I was hearing in your traditional evangelical church was a little overly optimistic as to what we were going to get on this side of death.
You know? Right.
And I was a little bit more realistic than my peers were. And secondly, it made me much more, and I hate to use this word, but more of a contemplative in the Catholic tradition.
Uh-oh.
Always more open to the Thomas Mertons, the Henry Now, and that language of faith connected with me because I understood that not knowing was a way of knowing.
Right.
And that had to be honored. That intuition, that we could not overprivilege, you know, discursive analytical thinking, as important as it is, or teaching, but there was just a dimension of faith that was a paradox, that the not knowing was itself a form of very powerful knowing. Am I making sense? Am I making sense? Like,
well,
like when you're with your wife, right, there's a moment when words can't capture what's happening, and you just have to sort of get into a place of reverent silence and be grateful.
Hold on. This is what I heard. I heard you say that because of the stuff I went through and saw and experienced when I was growing up, I was able to capture the gift of spiritual pessimism early. In other words, you saw the buff and fluff that the evangelical scene was trying to sell and said...
I've never used the phrase buff and fluff. I will from now on, but I've never used it. That's a great phrase, though.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm here all week.
Next book.
Morgan Cron, buff and fluff. You know what I mean? Like, seriously, you there's no... Okay, well, first of all, are you an evangelical? No. Did you used to be?
Yeah, I think definitely.
Okay,
and I think there are distinctives of that tradition that I maintain.
Do you get nervous about selling books and then describing yourself as no longer an evangelical because they're the ones that buy the books, baby?
No, I don't. I don't think I'm not an evangelical. I mean, I would say that my understanding of what that word means has broadened and deepened.
Okay,
but I, you know, if evangelical just means good news, you know, herald of good news, then I'm all about that. If it's about the subculture of evangelical Christianity that I see around me, I think that's a distortion that probably, in many cases, Jesus wouldn't even recognize as being close to the gospel.
Well, you'd be the first evangelical Episcopal priest that I know.
Oh, come on. That's not true. There are plenty of them. Whenever three or four are gathered, there's a fifth.
Oh, that's scary. Hey, listen, Chasing Francis, it's still one of my favorite half-read books.
Oh, I'm so glad. Did you only read the About the Author page?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay,
no,
that's
no.
The only one that matters.
I got a few chapters in, and then I accidentally left it in the airport in Boston. And I'm waiting my other... No, seriously, that book, it's brought up regularly, and I think... I don't know whether you grasp the impact that book actually had.
Huh.
Do you think you got it?
No, I don't know. I mean, the book continues to sell at this sort of funny, trickly pace. I'm hoping that this book will you know, sort of revive that back catalog a little bit. You know, that book was just, you know, you kind of give that stuff over, give it up, and you throw it out there, and you hope it continues to have ripple effect, you know. I certainly do get emails still. A lot of people talk to me about it. I just actually came back from Laguna Beach leading a retreat for worship leaders of, you know, sort of big mega churches. And the whole thing was on that book. That's what they wanted me to talk about.
See, this is what I'm saying.
And these are mega church, like evangelical big churches that want to hear about the Eucharist, and they don't blanch when I use the word anymore.
Yeah.
Or they want to know about liturgy, or they want to know about saints, or they want to know about history. It's great.
Why aren't you a pastor anymore?
Well, let's get a couple of things out of the way. I didn't steal any money.
Okay.
All right. I didn't have inappropriate relationships with a member of my staff or of anyone else's staff.
Aren't you a rare gem?
I know. I actually left, you know, without the shame of those things. You know, I'll tell you why. One is that...
People want to know this, man. People want to know.
Oh, listen, 98% of the people on your show have no idea who you're talking to right now.
You know how I introduced you in the promo all week long?
Oh, no, how?
Kathy Lee's ex-pastor.
Oh, boy.
Hey, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that feels good.
I'm having so much fun.
You know, first of all, I love her, so that's not the point.
Yeah, no, I
I love to start stuff. I'm an entrepreneurial guy. I don't even think I'm a very good pastor, to tell you the truth. Nor do I think I was called to be one. I think I was called to start a church. And at about year 5 or 6, starters are already past their prime. You know what I mean? Like, we're like on to the, we want to be on the next thing. I mean, that's what Tiggers do, right?
That's the wonderful thing about
and,
Tiggers.
It's a wonderful thing about Tiggers. Now, when Tiggers stay too long in one place, they start to undo the good stuff they've done.
Yes.
Not by accident they do it. I mean, they don't mean to. But the church needed a different kind of leader, and I wasn't it anymore. And it was hard for some folks to be okay with that. But, you know, a pastor can die, and people will still be mad at him or her for abandoning them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, you know, churches are strange critters.
Oh,
you're
so funny. So he stops being a pastor and moves to the land of a church on every corner. Where are you? You're in Nashville.
So, I got to tell you one story, though. Having come from Connecticut, you know, where a revival is, you know, 40 people showing up at the same time to talk to a deity. Maybe not the same one, even.
No.
I get to Nashville. We are driving down. We're coming from Franklin, down Franklin Road. I'm not going to tell you the name of the church, but I bet you know which one it is.
Okay.
I'm coming down Franklin Road. There's this enormous church.
Yeah.
And my son, my 13-year-old son, says, "Dad, why didn't we fly into that airport?" It's so much closer to our house.
That's perfect. Perfect.
Son, that's a church. He looked at me and went, "You're kidding. Look at the size of that thing. It looks like LaGuardia."
Oh, man. And your son is what, 27?
27.
Yeah.
He's a good kid, though.
Yeah.
We're hoping he's going to leave home.
Folks, are you getting a taste for how good a read this book is going to be? I want to read you a blurb that his publicist people put a spin on and made it all nice and shiny. Listen to this. In this surprisingly funny, I don't understand that, forgiving memoir, Jesus, My Father, the CIA, and Me, a memoir of sorts, Ian describes a childhood filled with remarkable stories, colorful characters that includes a nearly blind English nanny who teaches him what love means. Kind of like Schwarzenegger, a simple carpenter who leads him to faith, an irreverent New York radio personality who saves his life, a father who takes his family on a wild ride from the pinnacle of glamour and wealth to the depths of emotional and financial hardship, a beautiful and courageous mother who holds them together, and the hard-won peace that comes when we surrender to the unfinished business of grace.
Okay, now those last words are not mine. Are they in quotation marks?
Yeah, they're in quotation marks.
Okay, so I asked the Archbishop of Canterbury for an endorsement, and I didn't hear anything back for a long time. And I'm thinking, well, of course not. You know, it's not a theology book. It's not a history book. It's not his thing. So finally, he sends back this endorsement, and I got it around. I woke up at 6 in the morning, you know, so it was noon there, and I got the endorsement. I'm in bed reading my emails, and I see it come up, and I went, oh, my gosh. So I open it up, and he writes this endorsement that is so exquisitely beautiful. And, you know, he's a poet. That's what his great love is, poetry. And so I wrote him back, and I said, I saw that phrase, the unfinished business of grace. And I thought, oh, my gosh, Brennan Manning would, like, you know, fall real to the floor if he heard that great expression. And I literally wrote him back, and I said, dear Archbishop Rowan, I'm so grateful for the endorsement, but I fear I can't use it because it's written better than my book.
Well said.
I mean, people are going to buy my book to read your endorsement, which is fine with me. I mean, I'm okay with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong. He is an extraordinary, I mean, I have a couple of people in my life where, first of all, I have a great admirer of him as a human and as a thinker. When you walk into the room with him, his mind and his spirit are so large that it's you can barely get in. There's barely room for you, and yet he's also the most gracious, real person you can imagine. Just a great, great human being.
Well, folks, this is a read I recommend. Ian Morgan Cron, author of Jesus, My Father, The CIA and Me, a memoir of sorts. Folks, this is an enjoyable, palatable, and, I don't know, gracious read. And that's your stink, though, Ian. That is your stink. You stink of grace. What?
You know, I've been accused of a lot of things in my life.
I'm just
but
saying.
That one actually feels good.
I'm saying. IanCron.com. IanCron.com is the website that you all want to go to. And pick up this book. Get it everywhere. Amazon, I don't know, all sorts of black marketplaces you can find it. So just don't leave it in the airport.
Right.
All right?
No, don't leave it in the airport. And I am sending you a new copy of Chasing Francis.
Thank
and
you.
I think if you double up on the Adderall and Ritalin, you're not going to leave this stuff behind anymore.
Ian, it has been a pleasure. Love chatting
good
with you,
to hear
man.
Your voice, Drew.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is a privilege for me to get to hang out and chat with these kind of people. Ian's got a great pulse. He really does. We got lots more coming up.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Hey, folks, I want to tell you about the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. You ready for this? For $12.50, that's right, only $12.50, we'll mention your organization's name, website, and a brief description. Did you catch that? During each show, we'll read out your organization's name, website, and a brief description for only $12.50. Now, obviously, there's no point in doing that only once during a four-hour show, so we'll read your advertisement four times per show for an entire month, and each time we do it, it'll only cost you $12.50. It's kind of like putting an advertisement up on every church bulletin in the GTA, except you don't have to get permission from that grumpy old lady at the front desk. Now look, because there are limited spots available for our 1250 special, why don't you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250. Now sure, we're right in the middle of things here in the show, but if you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250, we'll take your name and number and call you back on Monday to sign up for the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. This is nuts. Are you sure we want to do this? How am I supposed to make any money?